You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API. Now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez. And before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right, we've got Diego Stucco.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Pretty good. Next to him, we've got Scott Gershon.
Good morning, Mike.
And next to him, we've got Bobby Sommerfeld.
I'm not next to him, but...
And joining us once again, we've got Andrew Sheps. Andrew, welcome back.
Thanks, Mike. Good to be here.
It's good to have you back. This is show number 110, and for Andrew, this is show number 13.
Right.
Something like that.
Glad you met Andrew.
Actually, this is Andrew's...
It's a baker's dozen, you know.
This is Andrew's... it's the five-year anniversary of when he first joined us on on the podcast.
Happy anniversary.
Oh, thank you. What'd you get me?
And then next to him, we've got the one and only Iron Man of the Audio Nowcast, Rob Arbatier.
Thank you, Mike. It's good for me to be here.
That was very presidential.
Yeah, that's right. Couldn't think of anything clever.
And today joining us, we have all the way from the UK, Aaron Friedman. Aaron, welcome.
Thank you. Good evening. It's an honor to be here.
It's an honor to have you here.
Lying.
Aaron is a...
That's a lie. Okay. That's a lie.
First of all, Aaron is a friend of Bobby.
He was.
He's a producer. He's an artist. What are a few things that you do?
I'm a writer, producer, and programmer. That's it, really.
So,
and technically, he can't say... He's from any place except California now, right?
I moved here 6 weeks ago.
Oh, really?
Right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, well, he's a new Californian.
Well, I knew that.
So it's your fault.
I recognize the California accent.
So. Absolutely. Cali boy accent.
I'm working on it.
And Andrew, it's good to have you back because you've been out and about doing some fun stuff.
Doing some stuff. Yeah, I mean, we could go into it now, or we could wait, or I don't want to hijack things.
No, you won't hijack.
Beta spent the last 6 months or so working on the latest Chili Peppers record, which came out a few weeks ago, which is very exciting.
Yeah. Great. So did you track and mix?
Recorded some, didn't record all of it, mixed all but three of the songs, and then also just went out and did their promo tour in Europe, which was pretty amazing. So
nice.
Did a bunch of live stuff, including a... very, very close to live show that went to 1,400 movie theaters all over the world.
Wow.
Apparently no one in the States knew about because nobody went. But all over Europe, everybody went.
Really?
So, wow. I mean, I think they were sold out in the States. It's just I don't know anybody who actually went.
Was that big screen cinema where you go, they did a live...
So we were doing a live 5-1 to the satellites, and it showed live... in Europe, and then it was delayed to 8 p.m. in all the time zones in the States.
Were you mixing the live portion or the broadcasted?
It's the same.
Is it the same?
Yeah.
But how? A lot of times when you're listening to the concert footage, you're listening against speakers and big concert system. Are you recording?
Well, we were in a truck.
Okay.
But we just had a split of the mics, and it was basically because there was a very short delay because you can't actually go completely live. So I mixed it once as we recorded it, and then we immediately started playing it out again to the satellite. So I had kind of a dry run and then do it again. So all manual mixing. And
Wow.
It was great, though.
Was that 5-1? Were you mixing 5-1 in the truck?
Yeah. I mean, you really are mixing just left, center, right. The crowd's in the back, a little bit of the stuff is folded, but it's matrix, and you don't touch the subwoofer.
And what console were you using?
It was a Studer digital board that was in the truck, which I had not used before, but it was fine.
So you didn't throw any audience in the back or anything like that, which I think is good when you don't do that.
They did a little bit, but I think that the movie theaters matrix so much of it themselves that you don't put too much stuff back there because it ends up just where the phase is bad and stuff. So you really concentrate. And you don't even actually use the center speaker that much. It's really left, right, and then you matrix in to get the center. Because if you start putting stuff in just the center... who knows what it's going to sound like?
Yeah, it sounds weird.
You want at least two things that you know sound the same, that you know are either not behind the screen or are behind the screen, depending on the size of the theater, and you just go with that.
Well, the thing, too, is with the center, especially in movies and something like that, it's so directional. It's so nailed to the center that if you're off the sweet spot, it could really mess you up as far as your perspective goes.
Yeah, and things like that. We just matrix some stuff into it, but really just mixed left, right.
Wow. Well, that's cool. And you've also did your the Waves thing. You also went on a little tour.
It was a few months ago, but I did a few little seminars. And then, unbeknownst to me, one of them is actually on their website. So apparently you can watch it.
Apparently you use the Waves plugin?
I do use Waves plugins,
quite a bit. I need 64-bit mode, though.
Whatever. does that matter? I guess we're going to talk about that later. I don't know. And I finally started my label, but we'll get to that at the end. What have you been up to?
We'll talk about that at the end.
And you're allowed to talk about it if it's your own thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Hey, hell yeah.
It's too bad. And I will.
It's too bad we're not going to have time for that.
All right. Well, hey, I want to talk about Scott. Scott recently had a dream sound gig, as far as I'm concerned. Scott was able to go out and record a launch of what rocket was it?
The Grail launch. Yeah. Grail.
Yep. Which is actually a mission for some friends of the podcast. Rob.
Yep.
A couple of your friends.
Yep. Bill Knopf, who joined us a long time ago on the podcast, was, I think, the project manager. I'm not sure what his exact title was, but it was his baby. Basically, and it's a mission that launched. It's basically two satellites that are going to the moon, and they're going to do some super cool stuff, measuring things about the moon.
Basically, what it does is it does like an MRI of the moon, so it can see inside the moon.
That's cool.
To find out is the core
cheese.
Is it malted? Yeah, you know,
it's basically
the big thing. What it does do is they get to see if there's any water.
Oh, that's cool.
Inside the moon.
Well, that's good. Well, let's start right there.
Something I wanted to know for a long time.
First of all, tell us about your rig. Tell us how many mics. Tell us all the backstory.
It was great. I mean, they said, hey, you want to go to see a launch? I said, sure. Can I record it? And they're like, sure. So we said, great. Anybody know what the SPL levels are and where we're going to be? And they went, no. So we took probably, I don't know, 16 of our favorite mics.
Of which two came back.
Well, you joke, but when we first was speaking to Bill, and he's like, I think I can get you within 100 yards of the rocket. And we start looking at, SPL, researching it, and we're like, okay, all the diaphragms will be destroyed.
Wow.
So we're like, I think that might be a little too close. What's the next bunker? So they said, how about 300 yards? And we're like, it might still be a little too close. So, when we got there, it was always interesting because there's obviously a lot of security, a lot of politics. And, and everybody has to authorize you on the planet. And because we were also not only NASA, but we were on the Air Force side.
Right.
So and it was great because Bill's kind of like Moses of NASA. So everyone goes, you can't do this. You don't have the authority, blah, 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 blah. Hey, Bill, come here a second. And he goes, what's the problem? And they go, he can't do this, blah, blah, blah. He goes, I'm the project manager. I work, blah, 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 at NASA. They're like, oh, no problem. We can make that happen. So we took a wide array of mics. I took a SASP. I took a DPA 4004, a high SPL mic. We took Sanken CSS-5 mics. We took Sennheiser shotgun, Neumann, KM81 shotgun. We basically filled a rack with crates, bins. And we went in, we took all the mics and the recorders with us on the airplane, which is always fun.
Wow.
Because they always stop you and they're like, what is this stuff? Because all I know is a big metal box with lots of wires sticking out of it.
Right.
Long, So we hand carried everything on that side. We basically shipped in road cases all of our other gear. And because we had no clue what to expect, nor did we really know when we got there.
Right.
So when we got there, we started with the gantry rollback, we had to get our gear, which of course is nowhere near the launch site, and again, you have to go through lots of security. So we got all the gear, rented a very large SUV, piled it all there. Then we were told we couldn't take the SUV anywhere on site, but they had like school buses of photographers. Like, I got my camera, I got my tripod. And I said, okay, I've got 4 or 5 racks of stuff. So how do you want to deal with this? So after a lot of cajoling and begging and whimpering, they allowed us to take our car everywhere. and we worked out of the back of the car.
Wow.
Then we had the problem of, well, we need to be out in the swamp where you guys aren't. And they said, yeah, we can't do that. So we said, great. So we, what happened was the first day we went out, you know, the gantry rollback was at midnight. You know, LA time, it was, you know, I guess a lot earlier. But the thing is, we had to be out there at 5 in the morning. So, you know, we get back in the hotel at about 1:30 in the morning. We sleep for about 3 hours. Then we get back out, still dark, and we have to go back out, set everything up for about 2 hours. And we had, you know, 200-300 feet of cable per mic. We had, we had four different recorders. We had 744s and Divas. And
wow.
Then we also had, like, Zoom recorders. Everything you can imagine, we brought with us.
iPhone with the little, micy.
You know, because sometimes these little crappy little recorders do amazing sounds.
Yeah.
And so we went about 300 yards away from everybody else, you know, and the first day. But then we realized that we were kind of in the tree line, and we were concerned that the high end was going to be muffled. And we didn't want to lose the beginning of the launch. You know, by losing the high end.
Right.
So, but at that time, we just, you know, you don't have a lot of time. So we set up and we get all out there. And of course, you know, there's a lot of things we didn't know about, like bug spray. Because we just went out there. We were so focused on getting a good sound that literally between that night and that day, you'd see like three or four bugs just biting you. You're on your arm. You're like, get off. I'm out for this, you know. But we did. We had the recorders going, the first day they went the 2-minute countdown. They held at 2 minutes, pushed the launch for another hour later, went back to 2-minute count, and scrubbed it. So we said, oh, okay, that's the morning. So we took all the gear, put it all back in the truck, and basically went back to our hotel. The great thing was on day one, we got a chance to see an assembly facility where they put the space station together. And we had a tour, and of course, we're like, wow, look at all these cool little levers and lifts and all this electrical motors. So we said, any chance of recording this? And they said, sure. So next day, we went back out, set up for the recording, set up for the rocket shoot, and they scrubbed it again. So we went back out and said, hey, remember that facility that we saw? What's the opportunity of recording that? So we did. So we went in, and it was myself, Peter Zinda, and David Young. And we went inside, and it was amazing. We had all these bizarre, weird lifts that were electrical and right. Things that... And the reverb on it was just stellar.
Awesome.
You know, because it was all white room, and we took tons of pictures and of how they're moving... These giant, basically, they had inside it two of the modules for the space station. One was ready to go, and one was being built before they shut the shuttle down. So now sitting in this room are these two modules they have no clue what to do with. Because now that there's no longer a shuttle.
Sound design.
Exactly. Can I borrow one of those? So we got a chance to go in and hang out, and that was kind of fun. So then day three comes, and we were supposed to have been gone on day three. So, you know, spent tons of money, extended our tickets, and said, okay, this is it. So we set up, but instead of setting up where we were, I was concerned, like I said, about the high end. I had a different concept, and what they did was something called Press One, and we were about 3/4 of a mile down from the rocket pad. And what they did was they totally mowed all the trees down, so you had a direct view of the rocket. So, because we had a lot of shotgun mics and a lot of very directional mics, I said, how about we just go downstream in front of all of the photographers and put our mics and just set them up downstream? So we did. We had, you know, had long cables, and we set it all up, we were getting tired. We weren't sure if we were going to get a rocket launch at that point. They were texting me throughout the launch on my rig, you know, are we doing it? Are we not doing it? And then finally, the launch happened. And what's great is there's about a 10-second lag of sound. So you see in the distance, it lights up, it starts lifting. and there's no sound. There's just nothing. And then little by little, the sound starts growing. And we all got our cameras out because we figured, you know, recorders are set. And we thought at that point, because we were so far away, we had a handful of mics that were going for the reach. But just in case, we had a handful of mics that weren't. And within seconds, right into the red. So we're diving for the, you know, for our faders and to bring it back. Knowing we had backups, we had analog limiters we were using. And it was amazing. It was somewhere between an earthquake and it's just ripping sound. And we got some amazing sounding stuff.
Really?
We had a DPA 5100. This is a 5.1 mic.
Right.
And we had that off, you know, about another quarter of a mile behind us, sitting on a Diva. And, yeah, we had all these rigs set up, and we recorded it. And it's one of those things that you don't get a second chance.
Just a bit, right?
You know, and you know, we're, like, trying to figure out where do we set levels. And right. There's nothing that says, you know, if you go to this notch, that'll right. be 120 dB.
You can't really go...
we were playing with a lot of air horns and... Yeah. And trying to figure out, like, okay, how do we reproduce, you know, 120, 140, 100 dB? You know what I mean? And a lot of it, obviously, was low end. So we had all these different mics that were catching different pieces.
Right.
When we've combined it back in the studio, we found that every mic had its own little signature.
Oh, that's good.
So we've kind of started combining it and put some in the surrounds and some in front. And we've learned a lot. And we're going to be going back for another recording in Vandenberg.
Wow.
In probably about a month.
Wow.
So
that's cool.
Yeah, and you know, it was great and we got a chance to hang out with their audio guys and you know, but it was an amazing experience.
How loud was it? Did anybody get a final measurement?
When I started asking, you know, what's the SPL? Can anybody have any data? Not a one. So then I started going to people said, "Okay, is it like a rock concert? Is it like a loud movie theater? Is it like your husband's playing it too loud and you want it a little quieter?" You know, I was asking all these different people, give me something to go on here. And the thing with Cape Canaveral is there's about a dozen and a half launch pads. And there's many, many viewpoints. So it's not like we always launch there and we always watch it from here.
Right.
Every launch is different. And most of them are shut down. So the sad part is it was a Delta II Heavy rocket, which would be the last Delta II Heavy at that launch site. So that setup that we set up will never happen again.
Hmm.
It's just, you know. And it was kind of sad in that, you know, we'd like say what's in that building, that building's abandoned. There's nothing going on. So I would say it felt like two-thirds of NASA was just abandoned because there's just nothing going on.
No funding.
What's that?
No funding.
There's no funding. We went into the, which I'm actually, for an upcoming movie that I've got coming up. I can't see the name, I don't think. But they have the shuttle assembly building, which is 40, 50 stories tall and hollow on the inside.
Right.
And we went inside there, and it's amazing. And we had the shuttle Endeavor.
Right.
Was sitting there next to us, and... And the launch pad, I mean, the launch platforms are three stories off the ground and four stories above that, and they move.
Wow.
And I said, "Well, where's the launch? Where do you put it on?" They go, "It's right over there." And I go, "That's the building." They said, "No, that's the movable pad." the scale of everything is just so absurd.
That's crazy.
And it takes weeks to move it, right? It's just like...
It just crawls.
Super slow.
And they had something where they showed us where it can't go on a road and it can't go on dirt. So... they've made this road of rock.
Right.
That it just treads on really slowly.
Yeah.
Because it would just break anything else.
Yeah.
So, and we got a chance to see a couple of the launchers sitting by. I mean, it's just sitting around waiting to do something.
Waiting to be recorded.
It was? Oh, yeah. I mean, I've got two upcoming projects that I definitely want to use these for and it was, you know, just one of those unique experiences.
That's awesome, man. I'm looking forward to it. Is there any particular, well, or you can't say any particular film that
I think, I think Riddick 3 is definitely in the future, and Guillermo del Toro's next film.
Okay. Nice. So somewhere in there, I'm going to close my eyes and envision a rocket launch.
All right. So right now, on both projects, we've got a decent-sized budget to go and record. Mm-hmm. So now for the next year, I'm just going to be recording anything cool. I want to go to Johnson Space Center. And,
nice.
You know, and anything that's just – that makes cool noise that could be used in anything that we're doing, we're going to go aggressively – start going. Everything we recorded was either at 192 or 96.
Wow. That's looking forward to hearing that.
Yeah.
No, seriously, I'm looking forward to hearing that. I'm going to come to your studio.
Yeah, and it did reproduce it pretty well.
Wow.
Amazing when you crank, wait, you got to crank it up the levels.
Yeah.
But we, you know, you put it in the sub and we don't have to add any sub sweetener. It's just all there.
Right.
And you do it and it's just, you know, your cheeks start vibrating and, you know.
No low air necessary.
Yeah, really.
Well, hey, speaking of recording interesting things, Diego has a cool little video that's up right now. And it's not rockets, but it's pretty cool. It's the you went to your local dry cleaner, right?
Yeah, I was thinking I could probably record the same kind of sounds at the dry cleaner if I mic these things close enough in the right position.
And you drop in pitch 2 octaves.
You never. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, you're just going to use it for a big fart joke anyway. Right?
Regarding the sub sound, when you open the dry cleaning machine, the air comes out. And if you hold a microphone right in the stream, it creates this massive sound, which I used in the piece. It was really, really cool.
When I saw your video, I kept thinking,
Yes,
we have to talk.
Yes. Because now they're open to the, you know, possibility of recording more stuff because they've seen me doing it, so they know that it's not just insanity.
They're going to rename it Dry Cleaner and Studio.
Right.
So, but tell us, what inspired you to do that? And we'll put a link on the... on the podcast.
The idea came because I walk in front of that place almost every day when I go to Porto's or the P.O. Box and stuff like that. And so when I walk and they're working on these machines, you hear... And so I keep walking back and forth, and someday my brain started to digest all these informations and I started to hear grooves in it. So I went there and I said, do you guys mind if I record a piece of music with your equipment? They say, what do you mean? Exactly. So yeah, because you know I do music with trees and sand. At that point, I lost them completely. But they said, "Okay." Hey, I said, "I don't break anything. I'm just coming here, recording the sounds, and making music." Okay, good. So a good friend of mine, Jean LeBrock, is the director of the digital media program at FIDM.
Right.
He helped me with the shooting and everything, and also Paige Adamczyk, she works there. I just want to thank these people because they helped me so much, you know, with the shooting and also helping with the video, putting it together in a story way, because I usually do just the music, but this one, it's a little more. So we went there, we recorded for probably 4 hours. And I was just going through the different machines. I started with the press machines, then I went through the other press, the puff press. I learned all the names of these things.
It's wise these days to be in music to learn how to be operator cleaner.
You know what's funny? It's funny because the video then got picked up by NBC on the Today Show, and one of the ladies, they were making comments about it, and they say, I wonder how the employer feels about this guy doing music. And the other said, but he doesn't work there.
Yet.
Because you never know. You may have a super talent for dry cleaning. I wanted to put my head inside the machine when it was spinning, but I couldn't because you can't get the machine to move when it's lid is open.
You can actually. You put a little thing in the little...
You can. No, I asked and they say...
Can they take the glass out and just close the door? And
I don't think they would have liked it.
The whole goal is not to die.
Yes.
Sticking your head in an industrial dryer is probably not
But I went with my head in just for a second, and then the guy told me, just so you know, there's a lot of chemicals going on. I said, that's why I feel this way. And then, I recorded, you know, the clothes hangers.
Right.
I was cutting them at different spots so I could kind of tune them, and they make these sounds. It's like an agogo kind of thing.
Right.
And then I basically recorded a lot of different grooves. I was improvising. I had just a BPM. A click on my headphones. And then later on, I figured out, okay, what did I do? And I put it together as a piece of music. I created everything out of it, including the sounds, the notes that you hear.
Right.
They come from the pipes because the engine transmits the and then it rattles in a certain way through the conduits. It was really cool. It was really, really cool just going around and finding all these different sounds.
And what mics did you use on that?
I just used Rode mics because...
yeah, but what types?
Oh, I used the NT5s, then NT2A, and the NTG2, I guess. It's the shotgun.
Mm-hmm. Any contact mics or any of
I didn't use any contact mic this time. And then I went through the API rack. I had the 512s,
nice.
550B, and the compressors. Yeah. And the Apogee Ensemble is a converter, and Pro Tools 9, and that's it.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a cool experience.
And how long were you there recording?
Like 4 hours, five maximum, but wow. I wasn't recording all the time because we had to stop when clients were coming in. And everybody was like, so what are you guys doing? Well, okay, so I can't really, we're doing a piece of music. How do you do it? Okay, that is another half an hour, please. I think I got probably 2 hours of actual sounds of me recording, and then I had to move microphones all around.
Wow.
It was really cool. Yeah, I really enjoyed it, doing something else, you know, different, not trees this time. You
know? No, it's cool. Some really great
really
great stuff there. And Scott, I mean, the rocket, I'm really, seriously.
We should mix these two sources. Yeah, we see what happens.
It'd be like the giant gong at the end of a song.
Right.
You know.
That would be good. Let Diego loose in the big giant assembly building.
Oh my God.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, that would be really cool, yeah.
Well, it's really cool because one thing that I like about both these things is just basically how important audio is and just sounds all around you, you know, and things that we take for granted, and especially a rocket launch because, you know, I've mixed a lot of stuff for post-production where you get the rocket launch and you see... And they're usually way over-modulated. It's that same, you know, Sound Design 6000 series rocket launch that you hear.
Well, the rocket does, though, create a ripping sound.
Right.
The question is, can you get the ripping sound without, strange enough, added distortion?
Right. Well, because you just hear a ton of that. I mean, it just, it's just...
And we had a couple mics that just, you know, definitely crapped up. Totally useless. Like, whatever. But most of them actually, you know, we used a lot of sound devices, and they have a great analog limiter in it that's just sweet, and saved our asses.
Well,
did you wear earplugs?
Sorry?
No, we had headphones.
What was that?
Uh-huh.
What?
Never get tired of it.
And the thing is, you know, on the rocket
just
side, it's definitely low end. I mean, that's what the thing is. You know, we did... a little plug. We did, if you go to Cape Canaveral, the Kennedy Space Center, we did the shuttle simulator. They have a whole simulator that makes believe that you're, you know, on the shuttle. And it was way more intense. Because we kind of theorized what it would sound like.
Right.
And it's the only thing that I can equate it to is an earthquake. You hear that low-end rumble, that subsonic, and then it just goes up the frequency from there. And then you hear the ripping sound, and it's just
it's
like
a dry cleaning machine, pretty much. That's what I heard. It went screaming.
Okay, take your pink noise, drop it down, filter out the high end.
All right. Well, hey, I'll tell you what.
Can I tell you one thing?
Sure.
Funny thing, I got an interview from the National Magazine of Dry Cleaners.
Nice.
They're going to talk about the thing on this magazine. And they told me it goes from New York to Los Angeles. I understand that. Thank you.
But you know, in the realm of sound design, your house is such a plethora of opportunities.
Right.
I mean, I did a sub-movie years ago, good 10, 15 years ago. I used to contact Mike on my air conditioner outside and then slowed it down. And, you know, the jacuzzi, the little whirl things on the jacuzzi were the torpedoes. Used an underwater mic and, you know, and I mean, your house has so many cool things.
Right.
Take it, drop it, door slams, drop it, pitch, and you got a kick drum.
Yep.
Nice.
You know, the coolest place we ever did a record shoot like that was a place that repaired pinball machines.
Nice.
Oh, there you go.
And they just had, it was like this giant warehouse full of pinball machines. And there was just a guy who worked there who you know, was like really just happy to see other people. But he was ripping apart these machines, and they just had all these incredible guts and mechanisms and stuff.
And you recorded them all? Oh,
of course.
Well, and it's so much easier now with the little Zoom recorders and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You can get a really good quality recording without having to lug a bunch of gear.
It's funny you say that, talking about your house. I just had to do a Halloween queue because it's pretty close to Halloween now. And that's people wanted Halloween music. And they wanted also sounds that they weren't. I had to make up myself, and part of it I had to do a grave scrape and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I went around my house with my little Zoom recorder.
Nice.
Found a steel dog. Got a steel dog, dragged it across a bit of concrete in front of my house. Same sort of thing. Did the thing. Got a couple of people around to laugh.
Nice.
Uh-huh. I made a special guest.
Okay, good, good.
Oh, no, they're going to have to wait to hear
it. Give me your best.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Coming to a Halloween queue near you.
Hey, but the big question in the pinball place, did you set the high score on any machine?
No, none of them worked. That was the funny part. It was all just a bunch of defective motors and stuff, but it was great.
Hey, it's just, you know, just goes to show you that really you can find all kinds of interesting sounds no matter where you are, and there's a lot of opportunities for people to go out and do some cool stuff and make some music. And then once you go out and record that, then you got to come back and mix it. And that's what we're going to get to when we come back from the break.
What a smoothly done.
Wow. So,
somebody's been up all week thinking of his segue.
So we'll catch you on the other side of the break.
Listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we were having a good time and talking about recording sounds and all kinds of stuff.
That's true. That is true.
It's true.
You are correct, sir.
We were also pretending to be doing the podcast while we were doing something else.
That's true.
You know, I wanted to continue the series. This is the last we've been talking about mixing. And really quick, before we to talk about anything else. Aaron, when you mix, do you use a mouse? Do you use a fader? What kind of mixer are you?
The dark art of mixing. Well, I use both, really. It depends. If I'm mixing myself in my own studio, then I use the mouse.
I gotcha.
But if I've got a mix engineer on board, then obviously we're going to use whatever that person is using.
Gotcha.
Which most often is a you know, traditional desk.
A fader.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about you, Andrew? Mouse, fader?
I still have a big old Neve in my garage, so yeah, it's still faders. But I've been doing more mixing in the box since Pro Tools 9, to be honest. Just different things. I mean, my record mixing is still all on the desk, but there's stuff that I do now on the laptop in the house. I don't even go out there.
I got you. The reason why I asked is because we did a couple of podcasts ago. We were, you know, talking about the different style of mixing. It seems like mixing has kind of evolved just like everything else to, you know, you've got the guys that love the faders. You've got the guys that love the mouse. You've got people that do a little bit of both. So we talked about that. And then on the last podcast, we talked about, you know, prepping for the mix. What kind of preparations do you usually go through before you're going to mix?
A lot of drinking. No, I don't do a whole lot of preparation before I start mixing because for me, the process of assigning outputs and figuring out what's in the session is how I get my brain around what's there.
Gotcha.
So it is sort of before the mix, but it's all really part of the mix process. I wouldn't want to prep a whole record's worth of sessions so that then I could start mixing because I feel like then I'll forget everything that I discovered as I laid out the outputs and figured out what was where and organized tracks and color-coded. I mean, that's one of the things I do is I color-code stuff. Guitars are always green, and the cleaner they are, the brighter the green is. But it's...
Wow.
It just is something where visually for me, then I can always find it, and the Sharpie on the console is the same color as the tracks in Pro Tools, and it's just a mental thing because then I don't have to go hunting for stuff as much when I'm mixing. I like know when I get to the chorus, I can glance at the screen without having to read anything and see, all right, I got four guitars coming and they're on these outputs because they're literally below the things I was already listening to. So
Sharpie on the tape is the same color as the track.
Absolutely.
Genius!
So Avid should actually come out with a box of Sharpies, the same thing as the whole tram color.
They should partner.
That's right. I like that, and I like the different colors of green for the brightness. Genius!
Because I forget stuff, but it's the kind of thing where while I'm mixing a song, I remember every single thing about every single track in that mix. The next day, I have absolutely no idea what was going on.
We should ask Avid to add in Pro Tools 10 a larger palette of colors, because we need grays, we need a lot of blues and greens. It's true.
It is true.
That's genius. I'm going to lift both those. I will steal them from you. That's awesome. What about you, Aaron? How about prepping for a mix? How do you prep?
Well, the thing is, when I'm putting a song together, I'm writing, I actually start mixing right from the writing stage, because everything I add affects how the song's going to turn out. It might even affect the writing process. So by the time we've finished writing the song and started recording, instruments, singers, whatever, when I'm ready to mix, I find that it's already kind of mixed in a way.
Gotcha.
So then it's just kind of tweaking things. But the way I used to work was I used to get it to that stage, and then we used to lay everything down onto 2-inch. And then hand it over to the mix engineer. And it used to be a little bit strange for me, because then suddenly all the faders were down, and what was my almost perfect mix was suddenly gone, and it all started again. And then it started to come to life again as that person would add their own magic to it.
Right.
But as I say, when I work now on my own quite a lot of the time, I'm sort of mixing as I'm going along, so I never kind of pull the faders back and start again and get the sounds on each individual thing, because everything has kind of played off each other to create the sound, and it's, then just polishing it, basically.
That's great. And really quick, why don't we talk a little bit about some of the artists that you've worked with, just so people can get to know you and what you've done. I know you've worked with Robbie Williams, right? And you've done some stuff with him in Take That.
Yeah, in the early days of the Take That stuff. I did a lot of pop music in the UK. And I, in the mid to late 90s, I was very involved in the dance scene. In the UK, it was a group called Spirits, which was very, very big dance act.
Right.
I was involved. I had a production team called Serious Rope, and we used to remix everything, all the American artists and UK artists like Jodeci and Alexander O'Neill and all those kind of people. And I've done some film stuff in the UK, and I've done some theme tunes. There's a long-running program on BBC at the moment, which has had my music on for the last 5 years. And I've now relocated to LA. I've teamed up with a writer called Pam Shane, who's been very, very successful. We've started a new production team, writing and producing.
Great.
And, I've always wanted to work out in LA, and I've been spending a lot of time here the last year, and now I've finally moved out here, so...
Until you found out I lived in.
We apologize for Bobby right now. Great. So we've kind of talked everybody through what kind of mixer you are, prepping for a mix. Now I want to talk about mixing. And when you get to that point where you have all your stuff, how do you guys start? How do you where do you guys go? Where do you look for? What's the first thing you zone in on? Diego.
Well, for me, because I deal a lot with non-conventional sounds, first of all, I have to figure out what is the sound doing, if it's supposed to be like part of the percussive thing or if it's tonal. So I go through the process of designing the sound first, and then I do a rough mix, which is obviously happening while I'm doing the sound design. And then when I'm starting to listen to this thing, okay, now I'm finalizing the mix, I have to really... I use a lot of colors, too. I like colors. I just go through this thing by deciding what is the sound going to be, because I don't have any guitar or bass in the traditional sense. And so, to me, it's a process of going step by step, and if I have, I adjust the sound, because if I see that that sound could work as a bass, but it's not a bass yet, I make it happen as a bass. So to me, the mixing process is an extension of the sound design process, And it's like that until the very end, basically.
I got you.
When I finish what I, when I start the piece and I know what it is. And yeah, that way.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's a lot of sound design as you're mixing.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I'm trying, obviously, to save the nature of the sound because I don't want to transform something into something else. It wouldn't make any sense.
Right.
But obviously, you have to carve some frequencies out and put some other things in to transform.
Make it fit.
Yeah, to make that element fit into whatever it's supposed to be.
Andrew, when you start your mix, how do you start it? Actually, it's in some ways, it sounds like you're, since you don't do much prep, sounds like you kind of start similar to what David does, trying to find out what you have.
I'm mixing generally very traditional instrumentation. I mean, it's rock bands.
Yeah.
So in that case, I mean, usually I will start with the drums only because they're on so many tracks, but I want them to work as an instrument. So I'll spend the first bit of time making the drums sound the way I think I want the drums to sound, and not just by themselves. I'll have some of the other tracks up to go along with them. So that then I can treat it as one fader. I just have a group fader that's the drums. And then I can pull the drums out, and then I can work on guitars or work on bass and work on things at the same time. But I'm no longer thinking about the 18 tracks or more that they've recorded to be the drum kit, and it's more like now I have an instrument. So you've got your drums, your bass, your vocal, your, you know, and each thing is a single instrument. So I start by trying to make things, kind of collapse stuff down into single faders. And so when I'm get sort of into the next stage of the mix, I've got the individual things, like the vocals, are all in one little set of faders, and just to the right of that is all the group faders for all the stuff that's spread across a ton of faders. So with two hands, I can pretty much get to any element of the mix, and that's when I'll start getting my balance together.
That makes a lot of sense, because you see a lot of guys, especially a lot of like newbie mixers, that will constantly tweak the drums as they're doing the mix, and by the time that they get a couple hours into it, it just, they're over here tweaking the drums and coming back and tweaking and drumming back and tweaking.
I mean, I only do that when something bothers me, and sometimes it'll take me a while to notice that there's something that really needs attention down there, because I've mentally stopped doing that. And then usually it's when I'll switch to a pair of speakers that's on the floor facing away. You know, some alternate listening environment to say, wow, man, that snare is horrible. And then go back and kind of rip the drums apart again and start, you know, kind of go back to square one on things.
Wait, speakers on the floor facing away?
Yeah. Anything to – it's a way to take a break without actually taking the time to take a break. Because if you sit in front of, I mean, I mix on one pair of speakers. I don't switch back and forth between lots of different pairs. I have my one pair that I use all the time.
Which are?
an old pair of Tannoy SRM 10Bs. Yeah. They're just my favorite speakers I've ever used. But they're also, they're very different from most other speakers, the way the crossover point is in the mid-range and the top end. So it's hard to find another pair you can switch with.
Right.
Because they just sound totally different. But if I stay on those speakers, then mentally I stay wherever I happen to be. And I'll move through the process and my perspective will change.
Right.
But I can never just approach it fresh. So either I could take an hour off and go somewhere and do something. But I don't like, I like to work until I'm done and then take the rest of the day off. I don't like working really late, having taken lots of breaks. So instead, I've usually got either a pair of crappy computer speakers or a pair of NS10s or something like that. Sometimes just one on the floor facing the wall. So you can't make any critical mix decisions while that speaker's going. You just put that speaker on, turn it way down, loop the song, and play solitaire on the computer, something like that, just to mentally get away from it. And usually 5 or 10 things will pop out immediately of stuff you need to address.
Nice.
That you won't notice when it's cranked and you're working on it because you're just in the moment.
Right, right. It's to me, it's that's a great idea. Yet another thing I'm going to steal. Yeah. No, but that's a great idea.
It's just
as opposed to going to a like an Auratone, even though, you know, people go to the Auratones and the small speakers, I like the fact that it's pointed away. It's like, you know, hearing it in another room.
Yeah, it's so that you can't try and make little EQ decisions.
Right, right.
Like, that's impossible. You really can get right back out to the big picture. Also, the other thing I do is I have my wife come and listen. Because nothing changes your perspective more than having other people in the room.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can talk yourself into stuff all day when you're by yourself.
Yeah.
And as soon as someone comes in and you hit play and you hear something, like, ooh.
Wow.
you know.
Yet another thing, I'm going to have your wife come on.
she's expensive, but she will come and listen to your mix.
Bobby, how about you? You're mixing. What do you do? Where do you start?
If it's pop music, pretty much the same as Andrew. I mean, start from the roots up, you know, other than, of course, the prep and the color coding, of course, as we spoke about earlier on. I generally get the root of it, which I consider the drums and the bass, if a pop sort of thing. I get that to a comfortable stage where I'm, like, happy with it-ish, you know, get it onto a slider. So I think it's important. I think we all suffer. I certainly do anyway. When I get faced with X amount of faders and I go, okay, got to mix this thing, it's a bit overwhelming. And it's really nice to kind of grapple with things. It's okay, there are 18 mics on this drum kit. Okay, group, bang, I can switch them all off at once. And it gives you a little bit more control. And you start to, at least you can switch all the drums off and then switch them on and just adjust the snare. It is a nicer thing. So I think it's nice to be able to start to control the mix a little bit and then push up the sliders and start getting creative and then let it be loose and let the art come into it. But basically, yes, sort out offending stuff in any of the recordings, if there are any. If I've recorded it, there's a lot. Other good engineers haven't, it's pretty good. No, but basically go through and, you know, fix things if they're fixed in as much. I'm talking about like a live recording of a real, right, real drum or something. You know, if there's something going on strange or something, see what's working, get it dialed in to where I think it should be, then bring in the lower instruments at all times, listening cross relating to the drums. I do something slightly different. If it's a lead vocal, if it's a pop orientated track, with a lead vocal, at least a major melody sung by a voice, I normally put that in really early on, even when the drums are, you know, not when I'm doing like basic drums and ambience, but I'll get the drums going and the beat going, and I put the vocal in and just hear where the pocket is to the person singing, to the drum player, and then put the bass in and start getting very like a loose, bad, rough mix. And then I start, you know, pulling things up. But I always keep actually listen to the lead vocal a lot. Believe it or not, which is kind of strange. So I kind of do the root with the drums and the bass, and I put the vocal in, and then I start building things around it. Unless, of course, it's something with full of strings or something.
Kind of giving you an anchor that you can kind
of, yeah, just something to bounce off of. Just like finding the tonic in a chord. You know, right. You go, okay, here it is, and there's the extensions. You can make, you know, those sort of things. So that's basically it. And then just basically dealing with my own little demons. Same with Andrew. I have a set of speakers. Two, actually. One in my live room, which I have the door open. I turn them on. That's 6.5 tannoys. Turn them on there and just basically check my emails and just cringe.
I have a set of speakers in someone else's house. I call them. I say, how's sounding bad? Okay, good.
I'm back an hour. I will add, it's kind of funny. My neighbors are not too keen on it, but I have a thing called a B52, and it's an 18-inch folded horn, right, 2,000-watt PA with, yeah, two big speakers. Yeah. You've seen them maybe in my yard. And I do go out there sometimes, and I've got a pipe, and I can just plug it in. Like, stand on the other side of my corner and go, okay. Just for fun.
I got a rocket you can put through.
Right. So this is kind of fun, but I have a question for everybody, and I battle with this, and I think it's important to keep it in tow. I find listening to either one set of speakers or multiple sets of speakers, I kind of get bored sometimes, and I start to lose vibe or get confused about mixing. I think we all face that. I certainly do anyway. It's like writing a song or something. You go, oh, is this working or not? So you end up kind of questioning yourself a lot, and sometimes you reach for the volume control of the monitors, which I find is a dangerous thing, and I do it, and I hone myself. I try and stop myself, but I think everybody does do that. You end up sometimes towards the end of the day, or as you're starting to get a bit not happy with your mix or thinking something's not happening, you start turning the thing up and down and start playing around with the volume levels. And I find, and I was interested in how everybody else feels about that, but I find that's one of the things I try to stop myself from doing. It's very, very hard to be as you say, Andrew, is where he has one set of speakers, maybe at one set volume, and just sit there and, okay, let me make this sound good like this, because sometimes you want a bit of Jones. You're like, oh, I want to hear the thing thump.
No, I listen way too loud sometimes.
Do you? Yeah. Do you too?
Yeah, absolutely.
You're guilty too, yeah.
Yeah, but I think
I could use my horrible joke and say, well, but I'm like,
yeah. I think the difference is that whenever I feel like that, I don't worry about what level I'm listening at. I just pull all the faders down and start
very
over.
Good, yeah, that's a good point.
I don't turn the automation on until the very end. The very end. I mean, I get to the point where I'm actually doing a live manual mix over and over for maybe 2 hours before I'll turn the automation on, because I feel like once I turn the automation on, I've now crossed some threshold,
right,
and now I'm finishing the mix. And it's one of the reasons I like still mixing on a console, because, first of all, I can physically grab tons of faders, which you can do with a control surface, but it's just really easy to start automating immediately, which in the writing process for the kind of music you were talking about, mm-hmm, makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to rebuild that, because you really have built it sonically as well as just recording the parts and things like that. But with the stuff I'm mixing, I need to just keep pulling all the faders down. So if there are things I need to automate to fix problems, I do that in Pro Tools. And on the console, it's just a static fader. And the faders will come all the way down at least 3 or 4 times on every mix.
Wow. So you just...
If I don't have a static mix that plays the song and it's exciting, then I'm not... I haven't gotten there yet. And I'll pull them all down and do it again.
That is a good point.
And that's when I'll put them up in different orders. That's when I'll start with like kick drum and vocal. And then guitars. And the bass will be last. And then try it a different way. Because it's like... You can't figure out why it isn't working, and then all of a sudden... And the stupid thing is, every time you do it, you look at the faders and like, oh, they're in exactly the same place as last time. You pull them down, you do it again, and they're still in exactly the same place. But all of a sudden, right. It's like, no,
that's true.
They're not. They're, you know, I mean, even if it's a dB here and there, all of a sudden, the chorus is exciting, and this works, and that works, and then you start to hear all of the stuff you want to do. So then I start practicing that, and then I'll finally turn the automation on and do it.
That's awesome.
So once the automation's on, it's usually less than an hour before I'm ready to send something.
Wow. Now, let me ask you guys, when you get to that moment of a little confusion, does anybody, you know, sometimes I see people pop in a CD because they just want to get some other piece of music going through their brain to kind of reset themselves. Anybody listen
to
anything else?
For me, it's not normally a confusion. Right. It's the sonics. It's just the actual well, song is
fighting. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Just step away from something.
But I think your ears are focusing in on specific things.
Right.
And I think sometimes you need to kind of reset you where it's like I'm listening so deeply into something that when you hear something against something else, a lot of times if you do take a break – and you step away from it, I come back and go, yeah, that's not...
You don't have to step away for very long.
No.
And I get impatient, so for me, pulling the faders down is like stepping away.
Yeah.
Because I thought... Because the thing is, you decide in your head that you've taken care of certain things, so you stop listening for them.
Yeah.
But when you pull the faders down and start again, now you have to listen to everything all over again. So the drums come up one fader at a time, and it usually, you know, in about 20 seconds. But as each one comes up, you'll say, oh, wait a minute, those cymbals are really harsh or whatever.
Right.
And you'll take care of something you hadn't bothered with that was actually the problem before. But you would never find it with everything.
I gotcha.
What happens to me, it's because I go through a lot of sound design when I'm doing my music. And I realized that my Genelex, I use Genelex, they absorb mistakes much better than the speakers of my laptop. So I go through these stages where I create this huge peak of frequencies. They don't kill me on the Genelex, but when I play them on the laptop, they kill the speakers. So I have to deal with the physical limit. That's my limit. It's not my Genelex. My Genelex, I can crack them up all and still I can enjoy. So I find useful setting up what is the physical limit of this sound? I have to deal with that. That's my way of finding a balance and also getting away from the, you know, ideal listening environment.
Aaron, what about you?
Well, I find that a lot of people with that when I'm sending my stuff out or whatever, they're going to listen to it on a laptop, and I know that for sure, you know. And I'm thinking, well, I'm spending all this time mixing on great speakers and all, and they're going to listen on speakers, you know, the size of a 50p piece. Do you have 50p?
No, 25.
25.
Quarter.
There's a quarter. Okay.
It's a bit smaller than 50p.
Yeah.
It only goes down to 100 rows.
That's right. So what I do is I can spend, and I use this also as my way of stepping out of the room or having a speaker turn. I mix on my laptop. I send everything into my laptop, and I sit with that on for quite a lot of the time.
Wow.
So with the speakers turned off and just monitoring on my laptop. And I like doing that because... You hear totally different things. You know, you're talking about the size of speakers and the sound that they produce, and then you've got something that size, and suddenly your record sounds different. And I quite like doing that. It just saves my ears. And as I say, I know that somebody's going to be listening to it on a laptop in an office somewhere. The other thing I was going to say is that quite often when I'm mixing, I don't know if you find this, there's sort of stages of the mix where you get excited and things are really happening and you're going, yes, this is good. And then you suddenly, your heart breaks as you just go, it's gone away from me. all what's happened the time, to my record? Sure. And then you go, and what I used to do, which the engineer used to stop me from doing, is go and grab the patch the cables and just pull them out and start again. And he'd go, you don't have to do that. We'll get it back. Don't worry. Just relax. But I quite often used to just go and pull them out and start all over again. But, you know, those moments where, and then suddenly it starts coming back again, and then you just feel great. You just feel it all rising in you, and then suddenly, oh my God, where's it gone? You know. It can be difficult, and you hope that by the time you're putting it down, it's at that moment of euphoria where it feels right.
What about you, Rob?
What about me?
When you're mixing, I mean, I know Gary does a lot of your mixing, but you do.
Well, I was
going
to say, it depends on the kind of project. On post production stuff, I tend to mix more than Gary. Gary's my business partner, but on post production stuff, a lot of it's about organization and. You know, especially if you're delivering for television or film or something, there's very complicated busing and all that stuff that I love that stuff and I thrive on it. And so I've gotten pretty quick at mixing for post. But when it comes to music, I'm lucky enough to have Gary do the mixing because he's just an incredible mixer.
He makes me sick.
He's got
dozens
of
Grammys. Effortless with that guy.
That's the scary
crazy.
Part.
Why don't you tell people who Gary is?
Well, his name, he was known for a long time. His name was Gary Olazabal, and he changed his name to Gary Adante, long story, but he's known as Gary O, basically, and was...
Songs in the Key of Life.
Yeah, Songs in the Key of Life, Hotter Than July, a lot of Michael Jackson's Bad album.
Wait, but are there any titles I know?
Probably not. He worked with each of the Beatles, and just his discography is ridiculous, and he's got dozens of Grammys for stuff he's mixed, but... generally, when I'm writing, if on a project where we're doing music, I'm usually doing the writing and he's going to be the one mixing. And I can hand him any number of tracks and he never gets tense. He's one of those very low-key, even-keel kind of people, which is why he survived in the industry so long. But I can hand him any number of tracks, and including when we were doing trailers. You know, I'd give him 64 tracks of live orchestra in addition to all my synth stuff. Leave him along with it for like a half hour.
What?
It's amazing. It's scary the way he
makes
it. A half
hour if he got a phone call. Otherwise, it's like 20 minutes.
And the way... Now, we've had Noisy Neighbors Productions for 21 years, so I've seen him mix a lot of stuff. We've done over 500 projects and just tons and tons and tons of stuff. I've seen him mix things, and it's just incredible to watch him. You don't learn much from watching him because it's just too automatic. But he basically... I organize all the tracks, and I know the way he likes them organized. I always have the drums and bass, drums, percussion, bass, keys, guitars, vocals, extra stuff. And I always lay the stuff out in Pro Tools the same way as I'm writing and as I'm laying the tracks out. And he basically, I mean, we worked together for years in the console days, you know, before the workstations. He mixes on Pro Tools the same way he did on the giant consoles. And he would always work with artists who would have gigantic consoles. So he would have, you know, a zillion faders out in front of him. But he basically starts at the kick drum, works his way through each of the instruments, and doesn't really second guess himself much. And by the time he gets to the right side, it's pretty close to there. And then he goes in and tweaks a few things. But he has a very even keel sensibility. And a lot of times he'll be putting things together, like he'll solo a guitar and put the weirdest EQ on it. And I'll just think, there is no way that's going to fit. And you know what? It's bizarre. It's like a game of Tetris. As soon as he unsolos it, it fits in just perfectly. Even the stuff – I just did the stuff for Google last week that we delivered, and it was two-minute commercials, and he mixed them. It was like a half hour for both of them. It was really quick, but it was all guitar-based stuff, and I listened to the track soloed, and I just thought, I would not have EQ'd this way in a million years. It just comes from tons and tons of experience. Right. I mean, he's naturally gifted at it.
Right. Yeah.
And Stevie discovered that when Gary was like 16 or 17. Actually, I'll give a piece of trivia. The first number one record Gary mixed was Nothing From Nothing Leaves Nothing, the Billy Preston song.
Hmm.
And so that shows you he's been at it a long time. But he still – his mixes stand up. Wow. I mean, you listen to Songs in the Key of Life, listen to any of that stuff today, and it still holds up.
Wow.
But he doesn't get too tense about the mixing. He doesn't second guess himself. And he kind of paints the picture from left fader to right before he makes any judgments about it. And then he goes back and tweaks whatever needs tweaking. The other thing, we do what Andrew said also, which is you, no matter how big of a complicated drum kit you have, you really want to think of it as one instrument. You want the percussion to be an instrument, and the bass and the keys and the guitars, and you make each section an instrument. It's very cool on the D control that you can have groups like that and then just spill them out to their faders if you need to. But we like to think in terms of that. We like to have groups for everything. And when Pro Tools started doing the VCAs and stuff really well, that was a big game changer for us. Because you want to – a mix can be an incredibly complicated thing. And basically one of the common threads is we've all discussed what we do to try to make it a simpler process for us.
Right.
I mean, I have the simplest process. I hand it to Gary.
Yes.
But it's all about trying to make it a simple, reproducible process because it's very easy to get lost in a mix.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And if you're not comfortable mixing your own stuff and you're not getting the kind of results, we talk about how you should have someone else master your stuff. It's even more important to have someone else mix your stuff because that's a deal breaker. I mean, you don't want to work on a song sometimes for months. You know, Chains is as good as its weakest link. If you have a bad mix, doesn't matter. It's going to sound terrible and people aren't going to want to hear it.
The thing about getting someone else to mix your stuff or my stuff is I get hung up about parts I've put down that I think, wow, that's such a great piano part or whatever. I love it. I get hung up on them and I fall in love with them and I want to see them and hear them.
Oh, we have that in
common. And a mix engineer will come along and just say, I don't care about your piano part if it's not working for the They have no allegiance to anything other than the finished product, and I love that about working with somebody.
Well, I agree with that, and you know, I usually, like Stevie, I usually put way too many parts in any given production, and you know, Gary wouldn't use a lot of them, and I would never say that he rejected the part. I would always say that he ran it through a mute plugin or something. It's still there. It's affecting the mix. You're just not hearing it sonically. But it's
like
still
40, minus 40 dB.
Exactly.
But that is a huge thing. You can never start thinking about how long it took you to do something to decide how loud it should be in a mix.
So true.
Everybody
absolutely
does.
Right. Yes. Absolutely right.
That is so true.
Especially the crash cymbal. The China.
Hey, Scott. When you mix, I mean, totally, let's change it. We've done a lot of music, but now let's go more post-production. Let's go more film. Let's,
I've been doing a lot of mixing lately, and I've been actually mixed all day today. And
Cement.
Yeah, really. Little, you know, fudge brownies. And so a lot of times, it's sculpting. And the problem that I've got in post is I deal with a lot of things that are noise-based. So I start with dialogue because I got to understand what people are saying.
Right.
What I've been doing now is a lot of big action battles with creatures and weapons and ships and flying creatures and other, you know. So
is this a new Meryl Streep film?
Yes. you got to come at it in multiple ways. But usually I start with the dialogue, then I go through the music. I want to make sure. Usually I have 6 to 8, 5.1. Pieces of music,
right,
broken out. Then what I try to do is I actually go top down. I try to go for the loudest sounds first to get them to punch because I can't get louder than loud. I mean, at a certain point, you can only get so loud.
Right.
So I always start loud and work quiet. And so like some people think, start with the backgrounds. The backgrounds a lot of times I don't ever use because it's just noise and it's going to mask.
Right.
So I'll go with my biggest sounds and try to make them punchy. I'll see how they play into the sub. I'll rock the room in that way. And then I start adding in Foley and backgrounds and other sounds. Then what happens is, especially with this one piece that I had, there were so many perspectives. And this one designer literally cut everything. All the fire, all the details, things that are 100 yards away, things that are close up. And I had just 200 tracks of thick. So when you put all the faders up, it's just noise, and there's no perspectives, and then you got to figure out spatially where you want to put things and things that fly overhead. You got to pan them to the fronts, to the surrounds, and what I found interesting a lot of times is I'll put something together that kind of resembles it, but then I got to squish the dialogue to kick it through all of the sound because otherwise people have S's and F's and little ends of words that just disappear. So I got to smash the dialogue and then fit it into place into the mix. But then what's interesting is, you know, there's fire in the background. So there's crackle or somebody's walking on stone. And
with fire in his hand.
Yeah, fire in his hand. And what's actually fascinating is the concept of masking. Because you put a bunch of sounds in front of it, you put some score, you put some drums, all of a sudden that footstep no longer sounds like a footstep, it sounds like a crackle or a tss, and it just happens to go with something else. So then I find that a good last third of my mixing is kind of search and destroy. Because you don't hear it at first because you're not listening for it. You're listening for all the big things. Then you take a break. I like to turn the volume way down because I lose all my low frequencies. I get all my high frequencies. And this is what it's going to sound like on a game machine or a computer or TV or
right,
something.
Right.
And all of a sudden, I hear everything. There's no ear compression
right,
happening. So all of a sudden, the dialogue pops. But then you hear all these bizarre high-end frequency transients. And then I go like, what is that in there? And what's great is you start taking them out or pitching them down or multiband compressing or something. And then all of a sudden, things start coming alive. All of a sudden, the music start, you hear individual instruments and things start sounding round and have air to them. And sometimes I'll, you know, are the reverbs too long? Are the reverbs too short? Do I need reverb at all? And then you start playing around with it. So it's, to me, it's more like sculpting where I kind of get a semblance of a face.
Mm-hmm.
And then I start putting the details in, and but most of it I find is subtractive.
That's interesting. I mean, obviously your mixing is
different, yeah.
But I mean, I can relate to what you're saying, especially with the spot work that I do. You know, a few things that I do is, number one, if I'm usually doing like a branding commercial for like a Toshiba or any of the bigger clients that we work with. The first thing that I have to realize is, what is the client trying to convey? Is this going to be a funny commercial? Is this going to be an informative commercial? Is this going to be a, you know, what's going to be the position? And then for me, the fun part is then trying to use audio to convey that story, you know. And lately I've been doing a lot of comedy commercials, and that's kind of fun because you can make things a little hyper real. You can make things a little bit bigger, and it's all just, the bigger the sound is, sometimes the funnier it is. Just, it might be a small little sound, but if it's a little bigger than real life, it's like, hey, that's kind of funny.
Is there a plugin that you like to use to give it that extra pop that gives it that presence?
What gives my overall mix, the one that I really like, is the Master X3, mm-hmm. the TC. Mm-hmm. I just, especially with TV commercials.
It doesn't work in native anymore. Pro Tools native.
No?
Stay with TDM.
That's a great, I don't know if you, are you guys familiar with that one? It's just a great overall, it's a great little multi-band compressor. You can adjust your crossovers. It's really cool. And it gives me that final little snap and really works well on the high end. And also, since I'm worried about broadcast, I double compress. I use that, and then I'll slap a little bit of L2 just to make sure, because it's not fast enough for the transients on some of the sounds. If the transient is really has a really bite, it's going to get right through the Master X. And the good thing about the L2 is the L2 will usually catch it, so it'll just like bring it back down. Which that's. If you're working post, double compression. I even know guys who triple compress things. It's just how you work your compressors with each other. But
sometimes with certain tracks, after you start doing, you're carving a frequency, and then you have to double compress, and then you're carving another frequency, and then you have the sound that is disappearing, so you have to bring it up again.
That's the thing with a little compression can go a long way. But if you're gonna get into double compression and triple, I mean, really know, you really want to kind of work your threshold, because you got to know when that thing pops in, so that it's not, because like you're saying, compression will just, a lot of people use it. And they kind of know what it does, but it just, nothing sucks the life out of a mix faster than a compressor.
Two things I use is, one, I use it, it's not even meant to use the way I'm using it, but Max Volume by Waves.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is a kind of interesting thing, because what it does is,
makes things you can get out.
But you can get rid of all of your low-level signals. So sometimes I use it in dialogue, where the words will be just, I just lost that word. All of a sudden, you give it a little bit on the bottom side. I don't need to make it louder per se. Which needs
a low slider.
The low slider, bring it up. And also, to be honest, sometimes on the music, a little bit of, was it Transmod from Sonics?
Yeah,
gives it a little. Just I need a little pop out of a specific instrument or a set of instruments that just cut through, because sometimes people mix very smoothly, so sometimes when I get some of the music pre-mixed, it's all very smooth. But the problem is you put some guns and some yelling against it, and it's gone. So sometimes I need it to have a little more dynamics.
Well, I'll tell you what, Waves, and I'm not just saying this because Andrew's here, but Waves.
What is that about?
Just so people don't think this is like a plug for Waves, no, even though you support Waves.
Okay, I'll have something bad to say about Waves. Carry on. No, I'll tell you something shit about it right now. Carry on.
I'm afraid now. I'm really afraid. No, I was going to say, Waves has some great compressors. I mean, I like some of the – they don't – I find some of the compressors that I mean, there was some that can go harsh really, really quickly. But like the hybrid compressor, I've had some really good. Yeah. And C4 and the C4 is great. Is awesome.
But get the MO4000 from McDSP is also a very good competitor on that.
But
you're talking about compression. Now I'm not going to bag on Waves. I'll tell you something funny about them in a second. But it's a bag in a way. But either way, talking about compression, and it's no secret. But it's a really useful thing. You spoke about thresholds, and we were talking about trying to get things louder and softer, and compressing and double and triple and whatever. Parallel processing, of course, everyone's uses. But when you have a signal or sound or music or whatever it is, and you want to compress it. If you set up a parallel channel, identical signal, and compress it, if you then take a split of that same channel and use it as the threshold drive to that compressor, you can actually change the threshold of that compressor, which is parallel to the original signal, on the fly. So you automate the send, so your compression changes, and you get fantastic effects, bass guitar, all sorts of little things. So the guy slapping.
That's a great idea.
It's standard old. It's not genius. It's like 30 years old, but either way, 40 years old.
Genius that you still remembered.
that's a miracle. So I'll tell you something funny about Waves real quickly. So here I am merrily going on in innuendo, running at 32-bit because it falls on its face for other reasons. So I've got a bunch of stuff, and I'm recording a drum kit, and I've got an MS setup, a couple of mics, mid-side miking. Stick them up. I love mid-side. It's a great thing. I'm recording Dobro MS, so I'm MSing all day long here. And I'm using the MS plugin from Waves. Runs in 30-bit. Great. Meanwhile, Nuendo's giving me trouble. So Nuendo's like, oh, no, you got to run in 64-bit. So, okay, load up the 64-bit version. What happens? Waves has no 64-bit MS converter. So I'm like, oh, so what a bummer. So I have to go and reconvert all those stupid files in real time, in old form, but doing a duplicate, you know, phasing. And I called up, contacted the Waves thing. They're like, no, we haven't got 64-bit support yet. So put that in your pipe and smoke it. Why are you on that website? Complain for me.
And this is Andrew's last podcast.
Okay, we're never going to make it to 14.
That's it. And that guy peeing on your lawn, it was me.
Yeah, and it was.
Anyhow. Well, hey, listen, well, we're going kind of long, but wow, there's so much more we can go with mixing. So really quick, everybody, I want you to give me a good tip, hint, anything that we can pass on to people that are listening to this podcast when it comes to mixing. Diego, starting with you, what would be a good tip that you would tell someone to either do, be aware of?
Well, to me, the key is when I start considering everything as a, you know, you start thinking as the drums, and then you have the bass, and then you have the guitar, and you're still thinking in terms of elements. And I do the same process, but I really start to feel the mix when I stop thinking about the different elements, and it becomes one thing, and it's either working or it's not working. It's hard. I don't know if I'm articulating very well what I'm trying to say, but I stop thinking in terms of sections. I stop thinking in terms of, I just think, okay,
of the whole thing.
Right. Is the bass overall nice or not? And then if I have to fix something, I go inside the different elements.
Right.
But it's more like looking at the whole picture rather than looking at the different elements.
Right.
That's, to me, the key when the mix starts really to make sense. And I'm pretty much at the end of it most of the time.
Great. Bobby, what about you? Hint, tip?
I would say one thing. I think that mixing, as we're talking about, organizing, color coding, and which we're all doing, it's very, very important. But I think sometimes when you get into a mix mode, I'm guilty of it, and I think I've heard a lot of people be guilty of it. We often mix the vibe out of tracks. You have like a live band playing, you gate the hell out of things, or you start over processing things, and you just start the thing, and it sounds good. No one can say, oh, the kick drum doesn't sound, it sounds great, and the ambience is sounding, everything's sounding really good, but the soul is gone. And that's very, very hard. And I find for people, a tip I would say is, make sure you know what you want that piece of music to feel like at the end of it all, irrespective of how many compressors you put on it or whatever. If it needs no compressors and it feels and sounds the best, that's the best mix. I mean,
great. So, yeah. Scott, quick tip.
You know, think of mixing as colors. When you sometimes put two colors together, you get brown and mud. Right. So what happens is if you knock one of the colors back a little bit, all of a sudden that other color can shine. So think of subtracting, and when you combine frequencies and sounds, they start adding to create mud. So sometimes by carving them out, it opens up an amazing
but
amount of possibilities.
If the mud is a different color.
Unless you like mud. You know.
Aaron, what about you? Hints, tip, anything?
Well, I suppose what I said earlier, don't get hung up or precious about any one thing.
That's good.
Just remember the song is king, you know.
Right. Rob, what about you?
I'll give you two. I'll give you one for Gary and one for me.
All right.
And he might not have thought of this one, but it's something I see he does, and I think it's something that everybody should aspire to do. And that is, one of the reasons that he can mix so quickly and consistently is that he has the ability to listen every playback. He can sort of listen as if it's the first time he's hearing it. So he has that fresh perspective of a fresh set of ears all the time. And some of that's just a talent, but it is something you can sort of do consciously, like put yourself in the mindset of I'm about to hear this for the first time, and it'll give you a fresh perspective. I mean, while you're learning to do that, you can step away and come back to it, and then you really do have a fresh perspective. But if you can stay in that mindset of every time I'm playing this, I'm hearing it for the first time, you'll just have a more objective perspective.
Great.
And the thing for me, I guess, for my own mixing trick bag would be that remember that faders are bidirectional. They can be pulled down.
Wait, what?
Well, I didn't know that either. What are you talking about?
Well, Andrew used to describe my mix and others as...
It's a yardstick mix with a happy face EQ.
Exactly. Right. And everything's louder than everything else.
You know, awesome.
It's something you have to learn as a more seasoned mixer. You learn that a lot of times you can make something seem louder by bringing down the things around it. And like Scott was saying, with colors, I think of it as more contrast, partially because I'm colorblind. But just like with visuals, contrast is important. And a sound, you can have a sound that's not that loud, but if it's in front of a whole bunch of other sounds that are really soft, it's going to seem loud. So remember to play with contrast. A lot of times if you're building a song and it's a pop song and you want it to keep building and building and building, or like for trailer music, well, a lot of times by the time you're halfway through your build, all the faders are all the way up and there's nowhere to go. And... You
need a new plugin at that point.
Exactly. Well, Waves would come out with something else at that point to make it so much louder.
Sorry, everyone's looking
for
at
whatever
me.
Reason.
No, I'm not. There are three Waves endorsees at this table.
I know.
And they're all going to have hell to pay after this podcast. But yeah, think of audio as contrast, and remember that a fader doesn't have to be up necessarily for something to seem loud.
Great. And Andrew.
All right, well, I'll get to just one that's more of a technical thing, which I'm not going to spend too much time on, but Bobby touched on it, which is parallel compression. A lot of people who are learning to mix now in the box have no idea what that means. I won't go into it now, but it's basically you make a copy of things. You don't compress one copy, you do compress the other, and then you blend those two together. It's using compressors the way you would use a reverb. And while we're talking about the Waves thing, the Waves put up a video of a thing I did for them. And it's not, when I first said I would do those things, I said, that's fine, but I'm not going to just plug Waves plugins because I use other stuff too. And I just don't want to do them. They said, well, great. I mean, to their credit, they were actually excited that I wasn't just going to say, and I use this Waves plugin on this. So if you go to the Waves website, there's a video of me doing it. And what I do is I've got a track that I recorded and mixed and talk about the production aspects. But when we get to the mixing, I spend a lot of time on parallel compression and how to set it up and ways to group things. So if you care about parallel compression, that's one place you can go to see how to do it. And the other is basically everybody said a version of the same thing, is that all that matters at the end of the day is what comes out of the speakers. Nobody cares what plugins you use. Nobody cares how long you spent on this part or that part or the other part. It's an emotional response to a stereo thing or a mono thing coming out of a couple of speakers. And if you lose sight of that, if you think, man, I got that snare to sound great, then your mix is not done.
All right.
Then all you have is a good-sounding snare drum.
Yep.
Yeah.
There are a couple of fantastic sayings. One is, no one walks away singing the snare drum.
Yeah. Or the light show.
Exactly. And no mix is ever finished. They're always abandoned. So
that's true. Well, hey, that's great.
Do you have any tips there, Mike?
I do. And the only thing I'm going to say is, you know what? Enjoy it. I mean, we're into audio. Everybody's into audio because you like what you do. You like music. You like recording. You like mixing. And so many times people forget that it's fun. You know.
So there's no pain in your process of mixing process?
Oh, no, there's absolutely pain.
I was going to say, otherwise you're doing it wrong.
No, there's absolutely pain. And there's, believe me, if it's like, you know, 2 a.m. in the morning and I'm, you know, just got my package from whatever network show I'm mixing for the promos and I have to have it done before I get to go home, it's that's painful.
Okay, you are doing it right then.
But,
when you do the 2 a.m. mix and you hear it at 10 a.m. the next day, what do you think?
Oh, I don't listen to it.
It's delivered by then.
It's on the air already. I'm onto something else. But I will say that sometimes when, you know, you get caught up in your emotions or anything, sometimes I just have to walk outside and just I'm fortunate to be in a really awesome location in Hollywood. But I just enjoy what – I just forget to enjoy what I'm doing. And then when I, you know, just step back and like, hey, this is kind of fun. This is kind of cool. And you just got to bring the joy back into your job, you know. We're not accountants. We're not – out there, you know.
You want to talk to my accountant?
No, I'm just saying. I mean, that would drive me nuts. You know, I mean, we all, everybody, and even the people who are listening. If you don't do it professionally, if you're just doing it as a hobby, I mean, there's a love, there's a passion that you have for this,
and we apologize to all the accountants out there.
Nothing wrong with accountants.
Where did you pick?
You are so getting audited.
yeah, I should have said that. But all in all, just, you know what, just enjoy yourself. Just have a good time. And on that note, so we're going to wrap this up. I want to thank Aaron for joining us today.
You're so welcome.
And his name's Andrew, by the way.
It's his middle name.
And I want to thank Andrew for showing up again.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
It was great. Some great stuff. I tell you, man, the color-coded Sharpie, I love that. That's awesome.
It's cheap. And, just go to see.
I know. And the different colors for the tracks, the cleaner, the brighter. That's awesome.
Do you hear a difference between the digital Sharpies and the analog Sharpies?
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Absolutely. I'm not going to tell you which I like.
Okay. You have to stay tuned to a later podcast.
And before we go, Rob, are you working on anything fun, exciting you can talk about?
You remember from the previous podcast, Michael Bard was down here from Portland, right. And we were working on a bunch of music for Google, and we can't talk about what it's for yet. But it all turned out great, and it's all happy and done, and they're thrilled, and we're thrilled, and that was a good thing, because it was a pretty complicated project, which I'll tell you more about as soon as it is public. I'm also in the midst of, like we discussed, studio renovations, and two of the rooms got painted today, so that feels like a small victory.
Nice. Yeah.
Of course, they were the two easy rooms, but at least
you got to start somewhere.
You got to start somewhere, and they're painted.
A bathroom is important, too, so.
Yeah. Got those. And, yeah, we're making huge progress with the studio. I think in the next few weeks, things will be back to normal. And it's been this whole year that I've been dealing with construction. So it's going to be really nice to have that behind us.
Yep.
And Andrew, how about you?
Well, apparently I had too much time, too much money, and not enough misery. So I started a label.
What's the label?
It's Tonequake Records.
Nice.
So we've got one thing that's actually released, but we're going to do a real release because I'm even bigger idiot than I thought I was. I mean, originally this was just going to be a digital downloads and Kickstarter for vinyl and, you know, a real mom and pop lemonade stand model.
Right.
And then someone said, no, man, this album's great. It could do really well. And I believed him. And now I'm going to put some money behind it and we'll do a real release with promo and radio and blah, blah, blah. So if you go to tonequake.com, you can check it out. But it's quite the learning process, wow. I can tell you.
Well, that's cool. We'll have to check it out and, you know, we'll...
Buy stuff.
Yeah. That's pretty much what you have to do.
Yeah. Check it out and buy stuff. You know what? Don't even check it out. Just buy stuff.
Just hand out your PayPal account and send you directly.
Exactly.
You need a sight unseen purchase button. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. That's exactly.
That's what the website is. It says a big button that says purchase.
Nice.
Bobby, how about you? You working on anything fun exciting?
I'm actually starting a couple of projects. Got two on the go. I've got a little project for Disney coming up that they want a bunch of music, comedy style music, so I'm going to start that, which is going to be fun. And then I'm doing the Sound Pool Library, which is still going very well, but
quite a lot of work. And then I'm working with the artist, writing some songs with him, and that's basically it.
Great. And Aaron, what about you? You working on anything fun and exciting you can talk about?
Working on an album for a South African singer at the moment, which we continuing in the end, towards the end of October. They're flying her out for some more songs and some more production. And also working on something for Disney at the moment. We're just waiting on an answer at the end of this week.
Right.
Hope for the right answer. And and we've got a couple of development projects in the pipeline. We're just working on some paperwork. But, yeah,
that's
so quite busy at the moment.
And Scott.
Hello!
You working on anything you talk about?
Not much. I've actually been very busy. I did something for the first time, which I didn't even know they did, but we did a remake of a very, very, very big video game. And what we went in was we did the animation or the graphics, and we totally rebuilt all the audio. Hmm. I remixed it, and they're going to re-release it as an anniversary, totally redone.
And is that Pac-Man or Miss Pac-Man?
No, it should be coming out soon. Is one of the biggest.
It's Pong.
Yeah. But it was fun. It was fun doing that, and been doing a lot of mixing.
Wait, and is it a Leisure Suit Larry?
Yeah. Oh my God! You found out? No.
I just found my copy of Leisure Suit
Larry. And then I started in about a week on a big movie. I can't talk about either.
All right. Well, we'll be sure to...
Soon I could talk about all this.
I need to clear something up in my own head. Did Pong... It didn't make a noise when you missed the ball, right? It was only when it hit the paddle?
No.
There was no, like...
I think it gave, like, a... Oh, I think, like, the Super Pong went...
No, the original Pong.
Oh, the original Pong, I don't think it did. Right. Do you know the original Pong was completely analog? That's amazing.
Yeah, I read about it. It was really cool.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, so, thanks.
We digress hugely.
We're old.
Yeah. Well... I can't really tell what it is about, but I can tell you that I'm working on new sounds. I'm creating some new stuff, and I'm really having a lot of fun, actually, to reconnect with what I was saying. I'm kind of destroying some things in the process, but also building. And so I'm having a lot of fun with that, and I'll be able to talk about it more in the next days.
Great.
Yep.
He's actually burning down the dry cleaners.
That's for the insurance. That has nothing to do with this project.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Great.
And you, Mike?
Let's see. We are in the process of, once again, looking for a designer to redesign our website for the Audio Nowcast.
Nice.
Mm. Last time we tried to do that, I got stiffed by the guy who committed to do that. So
it's really hard.
It's, you know what? It's unbelievably hard. And I'm such a finite time, and I have to do a lot of this stuff. So it's like trying to find somebody that, A, you trust, and B, is going to be cheap enough. Let's face it.
Actually, I have a small advice. If someone is looking to build a very simple website, I found out about flavors.me. It's like a one page where you can embed all kind of things, like videos, SoundCloud and stuff. You can create a new website.
Well, we're going to be on flavors.me. Audio Nowcast. No, I mean, come on. I still have two episodes of Spaces that are sitting there waiting to be finished. And the editor that was going to work with me on that one got busy. So anyhow, all that to say, I've got a lot of catch up to do. But I want to thank you guys out there because our numbers are really great. We're getting almost 6,000 downloads a show, which is amazing.
Ooh, nice. Wow, that's a big
success. It's amazing. Amazing. And so what we're going to do right now is I'm going to solicit, we need to get some Facebook likes. I want to get some good interaction on Facebook. We've got great guys that are there right now that post and that are really active. But really, that's a great, if you guys want to ask us any questions or just communicate with us, that's a really great place to go, is to just post on our Facebook page. So go, if you're listening to this and you haven't liked us on Facebook, like us. Okay? Like us. You really like us. The other thing I want to tell you is we do have a winner for the Bobby Osinski book, but Bobby hasn't been here. Next time he's here, we're going to announce that, and we've got another contest that we're going to go.
Now, since I haven't been here in a while, I just want to know, did Rob's drum machine ever get sent out?
It was a mixer. The MP7. Yeah. It's in process.
I just would hate to think that installed.
You know what? We have been successful with a couple giveaways.
But they came back, though. His ones did. Remember, he sent out one and he got two back.
But the we're on year five for the MP7s.
Well, they're sitting at my house, completely non-functional.
Floating.
Yeah, they were floating for a while. Actually, only two of them were underwater. One of them is above water, but still doesn't work.
That's pretty funny. Yeah. Well, hey, listen, if you want to get in touch with us.
Hydrophonic mixer.
You can post on the on our Facebook site, or you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. And also, like I said, if you're listening to us and you're on Facebook, like us. That's all. We just need a little like. Hey, and I do want to plug, I joined the sound design group on Facebook. They probably have several, but this is a new one. They only have about 171 members. But I just wanted to give those guys a plug. If you're interested, you might want to check them out on Facebook.
What's the name?
Sound Design.
Ah, okay.
Facebook Sound Design. That's pretty quick and easy.
That narrows it down.
All right. So thanks for coming out today, guys. And I want to thank everybody for listening. So we'll see you next time.
To the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez and uses AFEX's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.